Glad that you're here with us this morning in God's house to hear some words from one of the wisest men ever to live. And that's not me. We've been in a series in a book of Ecclesiastes, a book of wisdom written likely by King Solomon, son of David, and truly one of, if not the wisest man ever to live. A book that teaches us about wise living. And this morning, we're going to look at a rather interesting passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Interesting because of its message, interesting because of its translation, interesting because of its possible interpretations, plural. Turn, if you have, in Ecclesiastes 11, beginning in verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. And here at Grace, we always strive to take Scripture very literally. So I have loaves of bread in the back. We're going to walk down to Lake Shawnee and just let it ride. Let it fly. An interesting beginning to an interesting passage. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. Clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Ecclesiastes 11, 1 through 6. Now, it's an interesting passage and a difficult passage to preach because truly there are two quite likely interpretations of this passage hinging completely on that first line, cast your bread upon the waters. The first interpretation, first understanding of this passage goes like this. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight. And it takes this passage to mean make wise financial investments, diversify your investments. Cast your bread upon the waters means sort of send your bread over the waters and it will come back to you. It's a way to say send maritime commerce. And it will receive it back, but you do it to seven and to eight, so you're supposed to diversify your investments. This interpretation is sponsored by the Christian financial institution near you. But how many of you have heard this interpretation of this passage? Only a few of you? Okay, maybe actually more like half of you. It is an interesting and growing in popularity, it seems, interpretation of this passage. In fact, some of you, I wouldn't be surprised if you have a study Bible like I do, if at the bottom, in the little note, it says, a metaphorical expression taken from the grain trade of a seaport town illustrating the successful prospects of a bold business venture. And I'm actually going to disagree with the interpretation. I'm going to take the other of the two most popular interpretations of this passage. But first, I want you to understand this perspective, this idea. It says, casting your bread upon the waters. The word cast can also, the Hebrew word, can be translated as send, and so it's an idea of sending your bread across the waters in trade, and you send it to seven and eight different areas. Why? Because disaster could strike at any moment, and so if you send all of your investments in one or two ships and a storm hits and the ships go down, you lose everything. So the passage then is taken to mean sort of a cautious approach to investing widely. I know for a fact, as I even have read through the book of Ecclesiastes, this is the first interpretation that I was taught of this. And I imagine through some financial video on, you know, how to be wise with your money. And so the idea is diversify your investments, you know, send your money around to a variety of places so that if bad things happen, you don't completely flounder. And so it's a possible interpretation. And, you know, to be honest, as I was looking at some commentaries this week, maybe almost as many as half take it this way. But I think the argument for taking it that way is actually pretty weak. It's pretty weak for a couple reasons. Number one, if you follow the passages, you know, often they'll send you to another passage to say, here's sort of a hint that this is what's meant. It sends you to some passages that say things like this, and Solomon had many ships, and that's it. So there's not a lot of other scriptural support for it, but I think it's a weaker interpretation for a couple reasons. Number one, it'd be a very odd way to talk about commercial trade. It'd be a very odd way to do so. No other places are phrases like this used to talk about how you should go about investing. There are many clear ways to talk about shipping goods from one way to another. This is definitely not one of them. Even for wisdom literature, which likes to use symbols and images, this would be a bit of a stretch. But second, maybe I think the more compelling reason not to take it this way is because it would seem to run against the very flow and overall purpose of the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes, on the whole, speaks not about specific small situations, right? That's like a book like Proverbs. Proverbs takes like situation by situation. Ecclesiastes is painting with broad strokes on how to live wisely, how to lead a good life. It speaks in big picture things. For instance, the next four verses, the rest of this chapter, talk about a death. It talks about living well and preparing for death and judgment, especially if you're old, but even while you're still young, preparing and thinking through the fact that you'll die one day. Right? This is big picture material, and so for it to suddenly speak a specific bit of wisdom about diversifying your portfolio and investments, it would seem to run against the very grain of the book, so to speak. And beside that, this message would have a very, very, very narrow audience at the time of speaking. Right? I mean, you have to imagine how many people at the time that Solomon would be writing this would actually be capable of doing this sea trade and commerce and would have the means and resources in order to send their things 7 and 8 different directions. And the answer would be extremely few. And it would only refer also to the people who lived on the coast, right? I mean, you're not talking about, when you're thinking about Jerusalem, you're not talking about a place that's on the sea. You're having to move only to a couple main ports on the Mediterranean over there in Israel. And so it would have a very narrow scope for it to be talking to people and telling them about diversifying investments. Even if you took out the sea imagery and just said, well, it's giving you that imagery to talk about. In general, diversifying your investments, you'd say, how many people in Solomon's day have the means and the capital to make wide investments in different business ventures? It seems to be something that would speak to people today who in 21st century America or even in Western society have the money to do so. But those are my reasons for saying I think that's a pretty weak interpretation. So it's surprising to me how many of the recent translations take it, or the recent commentaries at least. So what is option number two? What in the world then does it mean to cast your bread upon the waters? What's the point? What's the idea? If it's not about diversifying investments, what is this passage about? I believe this passage is about living boldly and generously. Living boldly and generously. So why do I think that based on this image of casting your bread upon the waters? We're actually helped here, maybe surprisingly, by an ancient Arabic proverb that is nearly identical to this passage. An ancient Arabic proverb that we've found that says this, do good, cast your bread into the water, you will be repaid someday. Do good, cast your bread into the water, and you will be repaid someday. Casting bread into the water is an image of benevolence, of beneficence. It's an image of just doing good things, good actions for people. It's charity, it's kindness, it's beneficence towards everyone around you. It's living generously with your time, energy, and money. You could still say this has the idea of investment, sure, but investing in the people around you. So the bread and water thing. First of all, the bread in the East isn't what we think of as like our fluffy loaves of bread. It's normally like thin, wafery bread. If you were to cast it on the water, it would float and float around for quite a while. So when you cast the bread on the water, it would float. And the image then is You cast it on the water, and the water bears it away. It simply floats away, and you don't know where the bread is going to end up. Whether it's eaten by a fish or a bird, or it washes up on a shore and someone eats it. And so the idea is you cast it on the water where it doesn't sink or dissolve, it gets carried away, and who knows where it will end up. It's doing good things without having any idea that they may come back to you, without a possible benefit in mind. You don't know the end result, like when you simply live generously and do good to others. And there is actually a story that accompanies the ancient Arabic proverb that illustrates it perfectly. And whether the story is real or made up is unsure, but the story was found in a collection of ancient Turkish and Arabic translations that actually go back to the original Persian. And the story goes like this. There was a commander of a region in Baghdad, and he had an adopted son named Fetich, who he loved very much. Fetich was learning to swim, and one day he went down to a large river and was swimming, and the current pulled him away, pulled him under, and pulled him away. It was thought that he was dead. And so the commander, wanting to have the body of this adopted son back, offered a large reward of 1,000 gold pieces to anyone who should recover the boy's body. A sailor was actually on the river and was fortunate enough after 7 days to discover the boy. But he discovered the boy alive and well in the bottom of sort of a cavern that the river went by. And the boy had been unable to climb out. And so he came back to the commander and said, "You said you'd give 1,000 gold pieces if they brought back the body of the dead boy. What if they brought him back alive?" And the commander said, "I'll give you 5,000 gold pieces." And so then the sailor goes back and picks up the boy and brings him back. And the commander says, he's rejoicing, he's so glad, and he brings Fetich in and he says, "Bring him food. He must be starving after a week." And Fetich says, "I'm not hungry, for I've eaten bread every day." Commander says, "How can this be, as you were stuck in a cavern?" And the boy tells about how he found bread would wash up into the cavern every single day. And on it was stamped a name, was stamped the name Bin Hassan. The commander, curious about why such an odd practice was happening, called in the man Bin Hassan and said, "You stamp your name on bread and throw it into the water. Why? How long have you been doing this?" And Bin Hassan said, "I have done it for every day for a year to test an old proverb which I heard, which was, do good, cast your bread into the water, and you will be repaid someday." And the commander says, "Indeed, you will be repaid today," and gave him 5 villages near to Baghdad. Interesting, this ancient story, which speaks to a man doing random acts, hoping that it might do some good to somebody. And sure enough, this boy Fetich ate bread for 7 days while in a cave. And so casting your bread on the water, it is an act of goodness, kindness, generosity, one that has no clear expectation of reward. Look, there's no obvious reason why you should get paid back for an action. Right? You cast seed on the soil, and you may reasonably expect a harvest, but you cast bread into the water, and what good can come of it? And yet, there are many acts of goodwill, kindness, and charity which seem quite as unlikely ever to bring any return to the benefactor, but they do. Cast your bread upon the waters, then, here speaks of random acts of generosity and goodwill towards others. It is a bold and selfless move. Doing good with no expectation that any good could possibly come from it. And so Solomon here is giving another big, broad piece of advice to people on how they ought to live their lives, on what wise living looks like. And his piece of advice is this: you need to live generously, live boldly. And in this passage, then, Solomon gives 4 principles of generous living in verses 1 to 6, beginning with his first lesson found here in verse 1, which is simply, don't hoard, live generously. Don't hoard, live generously. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Cast your bread, live generously, and then, sort of surprisingly, and almost seeming to act as a contradiction, he gives a reason, because you may receive it in return. You may receive good in return, for you will find it after many days. The idea then being that while casting your bread upon the waters, this is act of kindness, of goodness, of generosity that touches somebody else's life with no expectation of good in return. The fact is, those who do this seem to receive good in return. The idea is that those who do much good, who cast their kindness to others, even with no expectation, will one day receive kindness in return. And it's an idea that's common in wisdom literature. We see this in Proverbs. We see it in the Psalms. And I think we've probably seen it, frankly, in life, too. Have you ever noticed how those people around you who are most generous, who are the most kind, who reach out and touch the most lives, how anytime they're involved in something tragic, when something bad happens to them, they immediately receive any help they need? When someone who's generous with their time and loves people, when they encounter a difficult situation, there are people literally lining up to help out. And when you cast your bread upon the waters, you're not doing so just in order that people will help you and give back. But at the same time, it's a common thread in wisdom literature that those who do good often receive good in return. But notice, you will find it after many days. It's this generic, unknown, unspecified amount of time. There's no clear expectation, right? If this were investments, you invest and you know that in 6 months the ship will return and you have a time and there and your good will be. But here it's this generic, after many days, who knows, but you'll find it. The application then is simple. It's just don't hoard, but give generously. Don't hoard. Because we're told today to just, you got to hold on to what you got. Right? Things are going to get worse. People will rip you off. You have to make sure you're set for the future. And as a result, pessimism and paranoia and fear often dictate our actions. Right? I can't do that. I can't give here. I can't, you know, put myself out there. And we cling and we gather and we hoard and we don't give generously. And the opposite here is cast. Cast your bread upon the waters. I mean, that's a decision you make completely free. Because it's even a decision that seems kind of nutso. I'm just going to go out there and throw my bread upon the waters? Yeah. Yeah, not begrudgingly, not pride from your cold, dead fingers. You say, oh, that wouldn't make somebody very successful. Casting their bread upon the giving of themselves, giving generously all the time. Doesn't Solomon know that success is often measured today in numbers and amounts and the dollars in bank accounts and square feet in homes and year and make of your automobile? I think he'd say, you know what numbers show success before God? How many people are you giving to? If you're a giver, you're successful. And you don't just give in one area. You give generously, liberally, in a variety of ways. It's about giving broadly and with no expectations. It isn't just giving to your families or giving to your close friends or giving to that one thing, or giving to your grandkids, right? Just to the group or the ministry or one thing. But who knows what will succeed or what will fail? Why not spread your generosity around? Cast it on the waters and see who knows where it will end up. And if you think by the word give here, it means only money, then you're gravely mistaken, right? It's your time. Often don't we hoard our time more than anything else? It's your skills, your abilities, your service. You give yourself generously. And not as a transaction, but just because you want to give. Right? Not expecting anything in return, but because it's the right thing to do. It's like the compassionate nun who is swabbing the blood and pus out of a young soldier's leg while a war correspondent was looking on. He almost gagged and turned away and said, I wouldn't do that for $1 million. And the nun, overhearing his remark, looked up and said, neither would I. Neither would I. It's time to give of yourself to others. Stop hoarding your time and your money and your talents and yourself and just give. Give generously. Do things for people that you wouldn't do even if they were paying you to. But do them because God has called you to live generously. What difference you're making for the kingdom of God? Does your list keep on going? Or does it end abruptly? It speaks to the idea of widening circles, not shrinking. And this is against the flow of, to be frank, many people as they grow older. their circles tend to shrink, their influence shrinks, their generosity shrinks, and reasons for it are abundant. Well, look, I'm getting older. I don't have the circle of influence I used to. Well, why not? I retired. I don't have coworker circles anymore. And that's even the counsel some people give around us. Yeah, you know what? As you get older, take it easy. Don't exert yourself. Don't put yourself out there anymore. That's a young person's game. Okay, but surely now you, in some ways, have even more time to widen other circles in your life, to touch more lives now, not less. Surely now you have more wisdom to share, more grace and love to give other people because you've experienced more and know more and understand more. Don't withdraw, expand. The reason being, you never know what's going to happen in the world because you never know, frankly, when you're going to need help. Bigger circles means more people around to help you. But also, I think on the flip side, you never know who around you will need help. That person who you think doesn't need a friend, doesn't need support, they have it all together, they have lots of friends and family, etc. You never know when disaster will strike their life. You never know who around you is going to need you to be in their corner. Well, you don't have to look any further than the recent flooding in the Midwest to see this principle, to see that this is true. There's even an amazing story right now of a Pennsylvania farmer named Eric. He had his farm, and back in 1985, his farm was hit by a tornado. When it happened, the farms around him rose up and gave generously. They helped him sustain himself so that now he still has a farm. And then 34 years later, when he hears about the flooding and sees it in Nebraska and farmers in need, he started loading trucks with hay from his farm to send them to help. They've collected some 90 tons of hay so far in one county in Pennsylvania. And some of it's already arrived in Nebraska on these trucks. How easy it would be for them to say, Nebraska? Too far. That's like 5 states removed or something. I mean, that's not our circle. They're not in our circle. If it's somebody nearby, it makes sense for them to help. But let the people close to them help them out. This is people instead who are living generously and expanding, 7, even to 8, not withdrawing. How's your generosity? Is it limited to just your close friends and family? Or are you stretching and expanding yourself to reach new people? On the other hand, are you withdrawing and only touching a few lives? Cast your bread upon the water. Cast yourself upon the water. Don't hoard, live generously. Don't withdraw, expand. And now in verses 3 and 4, it says, don't hesitate, live boldly. Verses 3 and 4, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Seems to speak here to two different types of people who hesitate, who are waiting. They're not engaging yet. They're not casting themselves yet. They're waiting. They're hesitating for something. In verse 3, it's literally people who are standing still, observing the obvious. I mean, his point here is, hey, when clouds fill up with water, they rain. And when a tree falls, it lies where it falls. It's as if there are people who spend so much time observing, simply observing what's in front of them, that they don't actually engage with what's in front of them. They hesitate because they spend all their time just watching. They're the watchers. And then on the other hand, in verse 4, you have the one who's cautious, who's hesitating, waiting for everything to be just right. Verse 4, he who observes the wind will not sow. Right? Somebody who's so worried about the wind blowing the seed as they scatter it, about moving things around that they're unwilling to sow. Or he who regards the clouds will not reap. Well, what if it rains here or there? Maybe it's going to rain or maybe it won't rain. You have somebody who's waiting essentially for the ideal conditions and then they'll act. The message here is don't hesitate, but live boldly. Just go for it. You must live boldly. I mean, he speaks to this common problem that we all have. Even when we want to be generous, when we want to expand our circles, sometimes we hesitate, we wait, we freeze, we're paralyzed before actually taking the action. How many of us wait for the time to be just right before we start serving or giving or investing in others? I'll begin when the kids are grown up a bit, less of a hassle, or when they leave the house. I'll serve more when I'm retired, or I'll serve more when my retirement starts to calm down. I'll build relationships when my life gets a little less stressed. When I have more time and energy, I'll serve when I have more disposable income. Don't hesitate. Don't wait. Because if you wait for the conditions to be perfect, you're never going to move. You will never act. Yes, it's true that investing in people is a dangerous and messy business. Some of your labors may be wasted. Some of your actions will go unnoticed. Some of your kindness may be taken wrong. You may be accused of, hey, we only tried to show love, but how many times we say, well, not right now, but maybe next time around will be better. If you're a hesitator and an overly cautious person, it's time for you to step boldly forward and begin living generously and expanding your circles now. The circumstances will never be just right. Satan and life will make sure of that. Situation will never be perfect. There will always be some fear, some worry, some doubt. And this actually leads into Solomon's fourth and final principle here in verses 5 and 6. He ends simply by saying, don't doubt, but trust. Verse 5, as you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so in the same way you do not know the work of God who makes everything. He says, look, you don't know the whole picture. You don't get it. Right? You don't know how that whole life thing all comes to be inside of a woman's womb, right? And so how in the world can you think that you are going to know every situation and every circumstance? You won't. You have to act even when you don't know the results. Only God knows the work that will end up happening. And then finally in verse 6, in the morning, sow your seed, and in the evening, withhold not your hand. Get to work. For you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Don't doubt, but trust. It's so easy to doubt that you're really going to make a difference if you step forward, to doubt that what you are doing matters, to doubt that you have the right tools or the right words, that you're smart enough or able enough to do the things you set out to do or the things that God has put before you. It's easy to doubt that you'll have the energy or the stamina or the excitement to keep the work going. It's easy to doubt and second guess before you ever even get started. Solomon seemed to say, don't overthink it. Don't doubt. I mean, if you're waiting until you know that what you do will reap a reward, you're never going to act. You simply have to trust that when you live generously as God has called you to do, that God will make some things flourish and others won't. And you may never know, but that's just the way it is. Because God has called you to invest in people, to live generously, live boldly for the sake of his kingdom and glory. Trust that whatever you do, however you try to do this, that even if you never know what may come of it, that God might use it to touch the life of someone because of your generous and bold living. It's an amazing story given by Chuck Swindoll, famous pastor and author. When he was young and he had just been married, he joined the Marines. And he says when he joined the Marines, he did so with the full assurance from his recruiting officer that he would never be deployed. So a couple years later, he was deployed. And as he's deployed, he's, you know, initially a little bit full of bitterness and resentment, but he decides, okay, wherever I go, I'm going to try to make an impact, a difference. And then he finds out he's being sent 8,000 miles from home to Okinawa. And Okinawa is known at the time for not being a morally wholesome place to be. And so here Swindoll goes into a culture and a situation and with the Marines in a place where he knows there's going to be a lot of difficulty and temptation. And so he says, Lord, help me to be faithful. Help me to be true. He says, I want to make an impact on people for Christ, but he had no idea how he would do so. So he gets to Okinawa and he meets his bunkmate. He's going to be sharing a bunk with in Okinawa, and he says, okay, Lord, here's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to step out and talk to my bunkmate about Christ, his bunkmate named Eddie. So he tells Eddie that he's a Christian, tries to tell him about Christ, and Eddie shuts him down right away and says, I don't want that stuff rammed down my throat, okay? You live your life, and I'll live mine. Swindoll a little bit put off and sad, but he says, okay, he gets involved in a Christian organization. He attends a discipleship program, did all he could to live for Christ, but still at a loss for how to reach Eddie. Well, one of the things he joined was a Bible memory program, and so he thought, well, Eddie won't let me witness to him, but maybe he'll help me review my verses. He's got a lot of time on his hands. And so Eddie agreed, actually, but again, firmly insisted, I'll help you with the words, but I ain't interested in being some kind of monk. So month after month, they went over his verses, and Eddie listened and corrected him and even encouraged Swindoll some. And after months of listening to Swindoll recite his verses, there was not even a glimmer of interest on Eddie's part. None at all. So they left Okinawa and lost touch. This was in 1984. Sorry, in 1984, 25 years later, Swindoll's phone rang. Hey, Charlie? Apparently, Chuck Swindoll went by Charlie in the Marine. Hey, Charlie, this is Eddie, your old bunk buddy from Okinawa. Oh, how are you? Hey, listen, man, I've been saved, my wife too. Thanks for living Christ. You know, remember when you used to lay those verses on me? Well, it worked. And talk about casting your bread on the waters with no promise of return. That would have been so easy for Swindoll to hoard his time in Okinawa. Right? He'd been somewhat deceived, frankly, by his recruiting officer. It would have been easy for him to keep his circle small, to only interact with the Christians on the island, to make sure he stayed pure in a difficult setting. It would have been easy to give up after that first attempt. I mean, Eddie has already shut me down. Right? What good could come from it? Would have been easy to doubt that God could ever change the heart of someone so obviously opposed to the Christian message. But he lived generously. He lived boldly. He didn't withdraw. He expanded his circle to include a bunkmate even who was openly opposed to Christianity. Didn't hesitate. Didn't wait for Eddie to make the first move, for the timing and situation and circumstance to be perfect. He trusted God and lived faithfully. And for 25 years, he thought nothing had come of it. No result, no reward. Little did he know that God used his generous, bold giving of himself to change Eddie's life 25 years later. I think this is what Ecclesiastes 11, 1-6 is about. It's about casting your bread upon the waters, just giving, releasing yourself to the people around you. Getting involved in their lives, living generously with no expectation of something to come back. So don't hoard, but live generously. And it's about keeping those circles expanding, right? Experiencing and impacting more and more lives, building more and more relationships. Never knowing which of them may actually come to fruit. Don't withdraw. You got to expand. And don't hesitate. If you wait for the situation to be right, I guarantee you, it'll never be there. Sometimes you just got to move boldly. And you do so by not doubting. Don't doubt that God can make whatever you try to do, can make it fruitful, even when you never know it. So you got to trust. Trust that when you live generously and boldly, when you step out into people's lives, that you may make a difference even when you don't see it coming. Let's pray. Father God, we know that your son's last words to us were to go and make disciples of all nations. So help us not to withdraw but expand, to reach more and more people, to keep building more and more relationships. Simply because it's what your son did when he was on this earth. Always expanding, always living boldly, never hesitating, always sharing the truth of you. God, we need some courage. We need some guidance, some wisdom. Point us to the people whose lives you want us to touch. And then help us not to hesitate. Help us to be generous with our time and our money and our energy and our efforts. Help us to stop saying no and start saying yes to you. It's in the Son's name we pray. Amen. Go ahead and stand. Worship team, come close us in a final song.